Good evening again. The plan for this evening is that the first session, I will be presenting some material to you, and then in our second session, we're going to split out into groups, and Julian will give you more information after our intermission. We'll split out into groups, and the handouts you have, you will want to take with you. I have tried to select some, I have selected some songs. I also tried, but... And we'll be looking at those lyrics tonight. We will not be listening to these songs. What I'm hoping to is coming back tomorrow evening then and looking at the music as well. And we'll do some listening tomorrow evening. So I think the plan is that Sunday school teachers will be leading those classes. And as you kind of anticipate that, Sunday school teachers, if that gives you heart palpitations that seem untenable, you might be thinking about who you might get either to minister to your heart or to take over the position. Well, we have been doing rehashes. I guess all of one evening we did a rehash, and I would invite you to rehash last evening's two sessions with a neighbor. So what was the focus of each session, and what was in your mind a takeaway from each session? Go ahead and take a minute and interact with each other now and do just a bit of review here. My review would run something like this, if I were to review it. Just the first session, that we acknowledging we all have inner hungers that are God-given inner hungers, but we can find different ways of filling those hungers, and we can find ways of filling, for instance, our physical hungers in ways that quiet our spiritual hungers, and we need to be very careful about that. How we treat our spiritual hungers and make sure that we give them the kind of nourishment that they are meant for. And secondly, then, in terms of our interaction with culture, that we are called to be different from, but out among. I mentioned that that music listening tends to be passive and disengaged. And then we have this sort of, if you want to call it a one-way dialogue, if there is such a thing. So if we're music listening tends to be a one-way conversation. I also called into question whether music listening, even if it's Christian music, whether listening to music is worship, as the acts of worship, which includes singing, but the acts of worship require effort and often feel strangely like sacrifice. Tonight, then, I want to offer a call to discernment and invite your attention to 1 Thessalonians 5. It's just a super simple concept here. But fleshing it out and living it out as these things go can be a bit difficult. This is 1 Thessalonians 5, 21 and 22. Now, in verse 20, Paul says, reading again from the ESV, "Do not despise prophecies." So we're in the context of prophecies here, but then he tells us what to do with these. Don't despise them, 21, but test everything. Test everything. And then he tells us what to do with that. 22. sorry, finishing up 21, hold fast what is good, 22, abstain from every form of evil. Thus, the way Paul tells us to deal with prophetic utterances is that we are, number one, to test them, and then take action. And he gives us some categories with which to think of this. He says there's good and there's evil, and then he tells us how to respond to it. We're supposed to hold fast what is good and reject what is evil. The connection I make here, and I don't think I'm doing violence to the scriptures to do this, art is prophetic. Music is prophetic. And not just the words. Music is built, art, more generally, is built out of a certain understanding of the way things are. And a certain perspective on that understanding of the way things are. And so art says, here is the way I see life, and I want to share that with you. I think you can see that pretty much across the board of visual arts, of drama, of music. There's an understanding of life that is being put out there. I'm going to say it's a prophetic input. And that we then must test it. We must examine it and then make a decision. I want to talk about that just a bit. Here's some observations. If we are called to test everything, then maybe the answers aren't as obvious as we think they are. I think often we sort of jump to conclusions based on very logical biases and bypass the testing part. And then we tend to hold on to those conclusions as tightly as if we had actually gone through the testing part. Secondly, I suggest that Paul tells us to test all things precisely because we tend not to test all things. Now, I'm going to paint here in really broad strokes, and I know that's dangerous, but I think it may be helpful in understanding a bit about this. I think there are kind of two brands of non-testers. The one brand of non-tester says, well, I like everything. I'm eclectic. I have very broad tastes, and there's room enough in my palate for all kinds of music. But what happens here is that this reduces the argument to a matter of taste, and it becomes subjective. So essentially, it demands that music is subjective. What I mean by that is that assessing music lies here rather than out there in the music. And there's nothing really in the music itself that can be assessed. Well, that's misguided, because Paul says that we ought to hold fast what is good and to reject what's evil, which means that those categories must actually exist in prophetic utterances. So the one brand of tester says, I'm eclectic, I have room for everything. The other simply says, that music is wrong, without ever having examined it. Yes. I think it does have several meanings. I am simply using it as putting out there, this is the way things are. This is an understanding of life that represents it accurately. I'm using it pretty generically. That's right. Thank you. This is not foretelling. This is not your weather prophets. So thank you for that. I've just said that I think one brand of non-tester is one who is inclusive, doesn't test just likes. The other brand doesn't test by simply disliking and rejecting. But how can you, Paul tells us, examine everything. How can you examine, in this case, how can you examine music without listening to it? Think about how Paul dealt at Athens, that center of intellectual and artistic development, when he was working with and interacting with the thinkers at Athens. He knew about their pagan philosophies and their art forms. He could quote their poetry to them. I think that's remarkable, that here we have a deeply Christian man who's trained in Jewish thought and poetry, and yet he could quote pagan poets to them. That's pretty amazing. I think that we sometimes fear that music is a little like smallpox. If you get exposed to it, it could kill you. And I think that's problematic. We're called to examine carefully first and then draw our conclusions. I have, during my teaching time, I at times invited my students to bring stuff for me to listen to. And some of them had the nerve to take me up on it. And I heard some pretty raunchy stuff. And I live to tell you about it. I'm not suggesting that we should have a free-for-all, but I am saying I don't think it's going to do us permanent damage if we actually do take this seriously to examine carefully various kinds of music. Now, clearly, you can look at some lyrics and say, you know, that is something I just don't need to listen to. There is music that's pornographic. I'm not suggesting that you examine that. One glance at the lyrics and you can put it away. You're done. But again, a lot of music doesn't fit neatly into that box. Well, I've said the answers may not be as obvious as we think. We tend not to test everything. But note this too. Conclusions can be drawn. Imagine Paul saying something like this: examine everything with great care, but I doubt you'll really be able to draw any conclusions. Good luck. So conclusions can be drawn even in the field of music. Now, the million-dollar question, of course, that I think we all ask is, well, how? How do we draw those conclusions? You ready for the moment of truth? I don't think there's any simple way. I kind of wish there were this transparency that we could pull off the shelf, slap it on top of a piece of music, see if everything lines up or not. I don't think we're going to find that transparency. But I would like to suggest to you that we may not be as dumb as we think. That if we begin to actually engage in this process, we may have more resources available to us than we realize. If we decide we really are going to open our minds to it, no matter which end we're coming from, if we open our minds to it and pray for wisdom, we interact with each other, I think we are fairly capable of coming to valid conclusions. We're going to need to develop some vocabulary in this, I think. But I do think, again, that we can come to conclusions. And here's the bright side. I think that as we find ourselves listening more carefully, taking music out of the background and putting it into the foreground and learning more about it, I think we're going to find our delight actually increasing as we listen more carefully and learn what's there. Thus, test, plan to come to conclusions, and finally, it's not enough just to conclude. Julian mentioned this in his opening tonight. So we can kind of change our minds about things without changing our actions. And I think it's maybe because that behind all of that is what we really love. Somehow, we have to actually act so that we do cling to what's good and reject what's evil. How does this action look? Well, there are two basic actions that Paul gives us here. One is to hold fast what is good. I remind you that at the creation, God didn't step back each day of creation and say, that's not bad, I think it could have been better, but it's all right, it'll good enough for who it's for. He's a God of excellence, and when he creates with exquisite excellence so that he can step back and evaluate, which is what artists do, right? Artists evaluate. They're constantly evaluating their work, and God's an artist. And he steps back from his work and he says, wow, that is good. He's a God of excellence, and I think that mediocrity has hurt us probably about as much as pure evil, if there is such a thing. I think mediocrity shapes the inner man in similar ways to what evil does. Now, I want to give some clarifications here. I'm not suggesting, therefore, if I'm saying we need to go for what's excellent and we need to avoid mediocrity, I'm not saying by that that all art should be highbrow, that you should now only listen to Cambridge Choir. I can just see, if we really take this extremes, you know, as you're slashing, one of the first ones you slash is Oasis Chorale, right? They're not good enough. I'm not suggesting that everything needs to be highbrow. There is good music that is not elite. And I would just point out folk music as one of many examples. One of my favorites is still Home on the Range. And last spring with our community choir, I asked a local composer from our church to arrange Home on the Range. I wanted them to have a flavor of Kansas. And so he arranged Home on the Range for fiddle and guitar, and it was just kind of sweet. And they really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed giving them just a taste of my own upbringing. That's not exactly highbrow. I think it was pretty good. Secondly, when I say I think we need to reject mediocrity, I'd also like to say with that, excellence is not universal. Now, that sounds like I'm firmly in the relativist camp, and there's a sense in which I am. What I mean by this is, for starters, let's just use an example here. It should be age-appropriate. So excellence, then, for a high school senior doesn't look the same as excellence for a kindergartner. When I was thinking about this, I remembered when I was in kindergarten, and I was asked to create a recipe. I was in love with my mother's meatloaf, apparently, so I created a recipe for meatloaf, which was as excellent as I knew how to make it. It included two ingredients, 1 pound of hamburger and 1 pound of ketchup. I think I also gave some explanation about how it should be baked. For a kindergartner, that's probably about what we can expect. I would suggest that for you mothers who are trying to do excellent meals, that not be the recipe you use. I think it's okay for it to be age appropriate, maybe for even skills and giftings appropriate. I suggest, too, that excellence is not universal in this way. It may be specific to circumstances. There are a number of prison ministries who take music into prisons, and their music is really well received there. It ministers to those people. It connects with them in ways that I think are helpful, that may draw them to the gospel. I'm not sure that bringing that same music in here and using it for a worship service would be a step forward because of where you are. I don't think that would help you mature. It might very well help those prisoners mature. Do you see the difference between the two? That's why I say, I think excellence is maybe a little bit relative, but we need to be, maybe it's less a position and more a direction. Hold fast what is good, but then also abstain from every form of evil. Think about the large story that we are in. Jesus is in the process of reconciling all things to himself. We have to recognize that there has been a fall, that things are broken. And you read Romans, well, you read almost anywhere, but think about Romans 8, the way all creation groans. Is music exempt from that? We need to recognize that music has also been twisted. Music has also suffered from the impact of the fall. And we need to bring to it a certain level of healthy suspicion, as well as the minds with which we approach that music, which have also been twisted by the fall. But then we move forward in time, and we see Jesus reconciling all things, and he's bringing all things, he's busy putting all things to rights. So that in Colossians, Paul says that God through Christ is reconciling all things to himself, whether in heaven or on earth. It's not just our souls that he's reconciling to God. It's all things on this earth that he is reconciling to God. Now, think about if we participate in music that is evil, then we are no longer participating in that thing of reconciling all things to God. Instead, we're becoming participants in the fall. I want to challenge you with this, and Julian's already mentioned this, but I want to challenge you with this. One of the things that I've noticed in my various discussions is that a lot of people are really pretty open-minded. They love to get into vigorous discussions about these issues, even vigorous discussions with people who disagree with them. Even vigorous discussions with people who disagree with them and can articulate their rationale succinctly and convincingly. But what I've noticed is that then it's easy for them to leave that discussion, and rather than actually discerning and coming to decisions about what to eliminate and what to enjoy, just kind of go on doing what they've gone on doing, even though they've been challenged to look at things carefully. I don't think that's what we're called to. Holding on to what's good and letting go of what's evil is an incredibly difficult thing to do. I think true open-mindedness is not just willingness to engage in the dialogue. It's willingness to actually change my mind when I'm confronted with truth. I'd like to summarize this process then. There's kind of what I'm calling these three steps. And those three steps are going to be this. Number one, listen. Number two, evaluate. And number three, act. Think about how that might apply to music. Number one, you listen. Number two, then you begin to process that and you evaluate it. And three, you begin to come to some decisions about how this is going to affect your life. I think the order here is crucial. If we do the third step, acting, without doing the second step, evaluating, then we live simply by our instincts. We jump right to acting, and we're just kind of like babies who, when I'm hungry, feed me. And if you, you know, put Mountain Dew in the bottle, I'll drink it. I'm just, give me something. Or if we do the second step, evaluate, without the first step, listening, we're going to lose our hearing, not in the sense of going deaf, I hope, but in the sense of having an ear with the people around us. Because again, we've never gone through the process of actually listening. We're just simply offering our evaluation about this music without having any leg to stand on. The means of discernment then are listen, evaluate, act. I'd like to give some specific ideas. Now this evening, as I said, I hope to be dealing with text and tomorrow evening with music. So what about the text? I'd like to give a basic principle for the text here, and that is that the more a text treats a subject that the Bible treats, the more we need to hold it up to scrutiny. The more a text treats a subject that the Bible treats, the more we need to hold it up to scrutiny. Let's look back at Home on the Range. Does that treat a subject the Bible treats? Arguably, somewhat. It talks about what, the buffalo, I mean, antelope, discouraging words. There's something the Bible talks. Okay, so there may be a little bit in there, but I don't think it's really intended to give a heavy duty treatment. We still need to look at it. Still need to think about it. But that's not going to have nearly as much impact as some other songs that we might be looking at later on here this evening. In fact, I hope to. Again, that basic principle is the more a text, a song, a set of lyrics, talk about things the Bible talks about, the more carefully we need to be evaluating that. Let's look at this sequence in action. You have on your handouts, I Love the Mountains. How many of you know this song? I love the mountains. Oh, we could just about sing it here. Anybody who needs handouts yet, if you want to put your hand up, Stephen will get one to you. You also have, I hope, a set of questions there. And I would invite you to look at those set of questions while we look at this text here. And I'm glancing at the time and seeing I'm going to have to make a fairly quick go of this. Over here, Stephen. All right, I love the mountains. I've got some questions here. A number of these questions I have gotten off a website that I'm sorry that I neglected to put onto your handouts. But if you wish, see me and I will get you the name of that website. I'm putting these questions here just to give us something a little more concrete to begin to work with. How do we begin to evaluate this text? Let's look at these questions. The first thing, again, is to listen. And here is, I'm just going to run down fairly quickly through this. Again, we're looking at, I love the mountains, and I'm looking at this set of questions that I have here. Who is speaking? Well, I am. I love the mountains. So it's the singer. To whom or about whom are they speaking? Well, glance down through here. Mountains, rolling hills, flowers, daffodils, firelight. It's speaking about the stuff of creation. What are key words? Well, there's one key word that comes back over and over. All right, so it's about love, and specifically about created things. I don't know, do we want to call boom-dia-da, boom-dia a key word or not? I would almost argue that it is, because I think it expresses something important about this song, and that is just this sense of jubilance. There's a childish, not a childish, maybe it's childish, I don't know. I think there's a childlike, maybe, carefreeness here that I find just delightful. Now I'm already revealing my bias to you. What's the text about? It's about enjoyment of the created world. Does the text seem to be simple or simplistic or deep or muddy? I think it's a very, very simple text. I don't think it's particularly simplistic, so I don't think it's being reductionistic. I think it's very much a child's expression of sort of just an explosion of enjoyment of the created world. Is there anything that sticks out in this text? Well, I've already said that. I think delight. Did the musician intend for it to stick out? I think so. Why? Because I think the musician's delighted with the things of creation. Are these subjects treated in the Bible? Well, I'm going to say yes. I think the Bible has a lot to say about creation. And I think it says it's a very good thing. Broken by the fall, yes. But it's glorious. It's shot through with God. And I think this song captures just a little bit of that. All right, these are my opinions. Emotional flavor of the song is very happy. It's exuberant. What's the message of the text? Again, it's delight in creation. Well, how might this message be misunderstood? I think this one would be a little hard to misunderstand, but I suppose you could misconstrue it to be somewhat evolutionary because it doesn't say anything about God. Not unlike the Bible book of Esther. I'm going to argue that for those people who understand a scriptural perspective on life, it's shot through with God again. Is there a particular worldview being espoused in this song? If so, what is it? I don't really see a particular worldview being espoused. And notice I'm not taking a lot of time for input here because I want to scoot ahead as quickly as I can and get through these three songs. But if you have input, just shout it out. Do I disagree or agree with the basic message of the song? I agree. I think creation is lovely. It doesn't, now granted, it doesn't treat the brokenness of creation. And I wouldn't want this song to represent all of my listening. But it's a simple enough song that I think it's okay for this song not to treat the brokenness of creation. That's my opinion. We could argue about that. Is the text poetically strong? Not really. Again, I guess we could argue at a child's level, it's fine. But there again, that's where I am on that one. Comments, questions? Let's look at the next one. Adele is a British singer, and this song is, it's old. I'm going to say it's 4 or 5 years old, probably. Who is speaking? She is speaking. This song is autobiographical. Let me read a little bit here. There's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch, and it's bringing me, I think what she means here is out of the dark. In other words, she's going to tell the story now. Finally, I can see you crystal clear. So clearly, she's talking to somebody here, and we're about to find out. Go ahead and sell me out, and I'll lay your sins bare. See how I'll leave with every piece of you. Don't underestimate the things that I will do. And you see how it's starting to turn just a little bit mean here. Next verse, the scars of your love, and all of a sudden now we've got more context for what's going on here. The scars of your love remind me of us. They keep me thinking that we almost had it all. The scars of your love, they leave me breathless. I can't help feeling we could have had it all. You're going to wish you had never met me. Okay, well now I know. Let's look at this a little bit. To whom or about whom are we speaking? Well, clearly this is an ex. Now, a former person that she has been a person she has formerly been in love with. What are key words? I think fire is one of the key words here. Scars of love and could have had it all. So clearly she is wishing deeply for what might have been. What's the text about? I think it's about lost love. I think it's about more than that. I think it's also about revenge. Does the text seem simple or simplistic or deep or muddy? I don't know. We can argue about this. I think there's a certain amount of depth here because there's a tapping into this personal experience. And she's talking about her current personal experience of wanting revenge. I think we could say at least there's a certain depth there. I don't think it's at least simplistic. Is there anything in particular that sticks out to you? Anger. Anger is what sticks out to me in this one. Did she intend it to? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, she says basically, I am a well-known singer, and I'm going to tell the story of how ugly you have been. I'm going to tell it to the world. And I'm calling you out. Are these subjects treated in the Bible? Yes, actually. Love and anger are treated extensively in the scriptures. And I want to talk a bit more about that later. As well as this idea of we could have had it all. So what is she looking to for her sense of well-being? We heard the word all recently in another context. What is the emotional flavor of this song? Well, it's pretty clearly angry. And what is the message of these texts? I think the message is basically, you have betrayed me, and you have left me, and you're going to regret it, and I will make you regret it. Interestingly, there's a song on the top charts now by the same one, and it's called Hello. And it has many of the same themes except the anger. Now it's asking, would you come back? And I don't know if it's about the same person or not, but it's taking a very different perspective on it. And it's only a month or two old. It's just interesting how that has changed. How might the message of this song be misunderstood? I have no idea. If there's a particular worldview espoused in it, I think the worldview would be something like this: I'm on my own, and I have to look out for myself. Well, do I disagree with it? You can guess on that one. I'll talk just a bit more about that later. What can you learn from this song and songwriter? Does it give you a new perspective? And there's a sense in which it does, and that is this: the lack of relational resources to those people who do not have the scriptures to teach them. It's sad. Is the text poetically strong? Within the genre, honestly, I barely feel qualified to say. Within the genre, possibly it's strong. It's no Shakespeare. But I barely know how to evaluate this one, given the amount of time that I've spent on it. I'll come back to that in just a bit more, a bit later. Last one I want to look at with you is Stay With Me by Sam Smith. Who is speaking? Well, the singer is speaking. Guess it's true, I'm not good at a one-night stand, but I still need love because I'm just a man. These nights never seem to go to plan. I don't want you to leave. Will you hold my hand? And in some ways, it's treating very similar themes as the one we just read, but it's not got the anger. It's got the anguish instead. To whom is the singer speaking? It's to his ex again. What are key words? I think stay. Stay with me is a key word. Now, isn't it interesting? Juxtapose that, those words, stay with me. Look at, hold that in your mind. Look at the second column. Oh, won't you stay with me? Because you're all I need. Isn't that interesting? Now, think about where in Scripture do we find stay with us? Jesus on the Emmaus Road and the disciples there, their hearts are burning. And they say, stay with us. And I think they would have a very similar sentiment to this, for you are all we need. What's the text about? Essentially, a singer's lover has left and he's lonely. So it's a lament. What does the text seem like? I think, again, there's a certain amount of depth. I'm not quite sure how to evaluate this one well. But there's certainly a certain amount of depth and a tapping into what he's feeling. Anything that sticks out to me right now is the poignant loneliness that's there. There's an incredible loneliness. And this is typical of Sam Smith's stuff. Are these subjects treated in the Bible? Well, I think so. I think so. And again, I want to come back to this in a moment. Emotional flavor of the song is very much melancholy. It's sad. The message of the text is essentially he's been jilted and he's in pain and he wants his love to return. How do we evaluate this? How might the message of this song be misunderstood? Again, it's pretty plain. I'm not quite sure. I'm just not quite sure how you'd misunderstand this. Is there a particular worldview being espoused? I think maybe the worldview being espoused, and there could be a multitude of answers to this, but I think maybe the worldview that's being espoused is my primary need is human love. And my primary problem, then, is broken relationships. Now, does the Bible talk about our primary need and our primary problem? Yeah. Disagree or agree, I'll talk about that in a moment here. What can we learn? Again, I think I would say same as Adele, how few relational resources there are when people don't have the scriptures to go to. I'm going to pass over I Love the Mountains and talk about the other two briefly. Adele's is a story of a broken relationship with an older man. She aches for it. We could have had it all, she says, but now without that relationship, she's angry and she intends to hurt him. That's the basic news story. But now let's look at the biblical story. There's brokenness in relationships, and she is angry because she didn't get what she thought would make her ultimately happy. Now think of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus talks in Matthew 5 about four specific things, anger, lust being two of those. And he specifically describes and addresses this issue of anger. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is talking about the kingdom that he's inaugurating. And he's describing what the life in that kingdom looks like. And in the kingdom that he's bringing about on this earth, we deal with wrongs not by lashing out, but we deal with wrongs by reconciliation. We reach out our hands not to wound, but to heal. And then when we fall short of that, which we often do, then we come right back to the beginning at the Beatitudes where Jesus says, so you're finding yourself poor in spirit. Welcome. The kingdom of the heavens is open to people exactly like you who find themselves poor in spirit. With Sam Smith, again, the story is broken relationship, and he aches for it. This doesn't go to anger for him like it does for Adele, but it goes to remorse and desire. Won't you stay with me because you are all I need? The biblical category here, I think, is lust. It's desiring ultimately something other than God. Because remember, he said, you are all I need. Lust says, I must have this thing to live. And I just want to quickly mention here what you already know. Lust is much more than just sexual. It's that I have to have that thing to have well-being. Now often, obviously, it goes into the sexual as well. But lust says, I must have this to live. In Jesus' kingdom, again, lust is dealt with as anger is. Lust is dealt with at a heart level. Here is what Smith says about this song. Sam Smith says this in reflection about Stay With Me. sorry, I need to give you background. He got a number of Grammys, I think, just recently for this very song. It's a fairly popular one. And now he says, Sam Smith says this in reflection, "I would like to thank the man that I fell in love with last year, the man who this album is about. Thank you so much for breaking my heart because you got me 4 Grammys." And I think, wow, that is sad. Now, I want to give what I think are here 2 problematic responses. One is revulsion. So all of a sudden we see Sam Smith is homosexual. And I think there's something in us that is revolted at that. Another is embracing. Oh, okay, so yeah, he's homosexual, but look at this. And look at this poignant expression of loneliness and just embracing it. Would you turn to 1 Corinthians 5? I think Paul gives us here some helpful categories. First Corinthians 5, verses 9 to 13. The Corinthian church is anything but a pretty church that has it all together. And Paul says this, "I wrote to you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people." But then he clarifies, "Not at all meaning the sexually immoral people of this world, or the greedy and swindlers or idolaters, since then you would need to go out of the world. But now I am writing to you not to associate with anyone who bears the name of brother," so somebody within the church, "if he is guilty of sexual immorality or greed, or is an idolater, reviler, drunkard, or swindler, not even to eat with such a one. For what have I to do with judging outsiders? Is it not those inside the church whom you are to judge? God judges those outside. Purge the evil person from among you." Now, how does that impact us here? We have those inside and those outside. Paul exhorts the church not to associate with sexually immoral people, but he hastens to clarify he's not talking about people outside the church. He's only talking about people inside the church. Paul is expecting that we will be associating with sexually immoral people outside the church. That's a very interesting assumption there. But inside the church, there is no room for ongoing sexually immoral practice. And he says, purge the evil person from among you. I think we can apply that here. Look at Adele. She artistically portrays brokenness, and I'll argue she does it pretty well. I think it's a valid expression of what happens in the fall. But her response of anger is not the way of Jesus. Sam Smith artistically portrays loneliness, rejection, and the hunger for love, and it's valid to express that. But his lust is not the way of Jesus. I think we're going to oversimplify if we simply say, well, should I listen to this or not? If I listen to this in a way that feeds me, and I'm going to suggest to you that about the 3rd or 4th or 34th time that you listen to this, it's feeding you. If I listen to this in a way that feeds me, or I listen to this or stuff like it frequently so that it becomes a part of my mental landscape, I need to understand that I am embracing ideals that run contrary to the kingdom of Jesus. I am treating these artists like insiders because now I'm accepting their prophetic input. I'm embracing it. And to me, I think Paul would say, purge the evil person from among you. But on the other hand, I think I also oversimplify if I think that merely rejecting or being revolted by the musician is sufficient. So on the first side, I don't think it's adequate to simply embrace. On the other side, I don't think it's adequate to simply reject. In this case, I'm also treating this musician like an insider. But they're not. I'm holding them to a standard they have no particular reason for having. I'm holding them to a Christian standard, but they're not Christians. I'm assuming. I haven't checked them out. Okay. But from what I'm seeing in their music, how can I expect them to think and act like Christians. They're clearly of the world. They don't need my condemnation. They need my compassion. And here, I think Paul would say, I did not mean at all that you should not associate with sexually immoral people in the world. I'd like to pick this up tomorrow. I'd be glad for your input, because I realize this is a little controversial here, and I'm trying to find a way of how we can really deal biblically with these various people and what they write. Because I think we need to remember, it's not just music. Music is an expression of the hearts of people. When we come back after break, we'll split into groups and spend then the rest of the evening in those small groups evaluating the rest of the lyrics that you have in front of you. Let's go ahead and take about 5 minutes here, and then Julian, you can maybe call it to order after that. Thank you.